Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Wynn Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WynnSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Ringside Chaos, the most passionate and sophisticated pro wrestling podcast in the world today, where the number one rule on this program is that if you are not willing to discuss pro wrestling in the most passionate way, well, Ringside Chaos would not be the place for you, because it is a prerequisite to be passionate about pro wrestling, and that's what this is all about. I am the Bear of Texas, and let's welcome back Brooklyn's finest, Mark Braverman. And Mark, today's episode, as always, dedicated to the memory of your younger brother, Jeffrey Braverman. But I feel like today, this episode is a favorite to you personally, sir.
Yeah, it is. I was a very big fan of the men who we're going to talk about today. Kevin Sullivan, a.k.a. the Taskmaster, worked his whole career in WCW. Worked for the NWA. He also did a little bit. He also did some time in Eastern Championship Wrestling, which eventually became, of course, ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling. This was a guy who was always entertaining. He was always amazing in the ring. He led one of the most amazing heel groups of all time, the Dungeon of Doom, which had Haku was in there, Barbarian was in there, but they went on different names. Haku was called Meg at the time. The Yeti was in there, who was played by Bruce Pumper Beefcake. The Giant, that's how his career started. There was some... Earthquake was a member at the time, but he was still known as Shark. And then John Tundon, and the Man with No Name. So many wonderful, wonderful wrestlers came out of that organ, came out of just that heel group. And a lot of people also called Kevin Sullivan the Prince of Darkness, the wrestling version of Ozzy Osbourne. If you're a heavy metal fan, we also happen to call Ozzy the Prince of Darkness. Eventually, though, in the mid-90s, he changed his name from Kevin Sullivan to now the Taskmaster. So there's so many wonderful things we're going to talk about today. Kevin Sullivan survived by his wife, Linda, their four children, who I'm sure we'll absolutely miss their father. The wrestling world took a very big blow on Friday. This was just a horrible loss if you're a wrestling fan, especially if you're a fan of the NWA and WCW. This really, really hurt.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, in this episode, this is why I let you kind of, like, do, like, the outtake as far as, you know, you giving the runaround and the opening statement about Kevin Sullivan, because this is sad to say, but I really didn't know much about the guy, you know, but, you know, You know, I learned a little bit about him when Dark Side of the Ring did the two episodes about the late Eddie Guerrero and, of course, Chris Benoit. That's when I learned a little bit about Kevin Sullivan. But there's part of that that we're not going to talk about on the show, on this program, because of the tragedy involving Benoit. And you know what I mean. And yes, it's out of respect. It's out of respect. So, but, you know, during my research on the guy, and first of all, I got to give a shout out to you, Mark, because when you texted me saying that you got your notes, you did your research, and you did your homework, and I'm proud of you, Mark, because there's times I've done episodes where there's a lot of stuff that I missed out because it's done on the fly, I don't have enough time and all that, but, you know, the fact that you took the time and responsibility to be prepared, you see, this is why it takes passion and sophistication on this show, because we take pro wrestling very, very seriously. Because in my case, pro wrestling was an escape. Now, I don't want to get in my personal life and the way I grew up with all the bullying and everything, but pro wrestling was an escape. So pro wrestling is and has been very, very important to me, despite being ridiculed about it by so many kids and even my own parents. But Kevin Sullivan, the bottom line is Kevin Sullivan, one of the best bookers in wrestling, one of the most unique and creative-like minds in professional wrestling, you know, from 1994 to 1999, you know, him as the booker of WCW, he made WCW pretty entertaining.
He was the booker.
It had to come to an end, but but WCW was afloat when he was in charge of the booking committee.
He was on the booking committee, but he wasn't the sole end, but he wasn't the end all be all. Unfortunately, that went to Eric Bischoff, who I call another name. But again, we're going to be very respectful on this show. I'm not a fan of Eric Bischoff at all. But Kevin Sullivan did book himself in some amazing matches. He did book a lot of amazing feuds, particularly on Chris Benoit, of course, the Four Horsemen against the Dungeon of Doom. The original feud was the Dungeon of Doom against Hulk Hogan, Savage, and Sting. And then the Four Horsemen got involved, and then the Horsemen broke off from the NWO and turned face, and then they started fighting the Dungeon of Doom, and then the whole NWO thing happened, which was the fall down of WCW, but that's a different story.
Bash of the Beast.
They had some of the most amazing matches between the Four Horsemen and the Dungeon of Doom. There are so many. Ming and Chris Benoit had a great series against each other. Chris Benoit and Taskmaster had two of the most incredible matches in pay-per-view history. WCW's Bash the Beach 1997, which I happen to have right here.
Look at that. And of course, Hogan's on the cover. Are you surprised?
Of course, Hogan's on the cover. And of course, this was the infamous one where he teamed up with Rodman against Luger and the Giant. But a very hidden. This is actually one of the best pay-per-views WCW ever did. There's an amazing Lucha Libre six-man tag on it, which is incredible. But Benoit and Taskmaster, what they call a death match with the loser's career, it's over. And this was Chris Benoit's last match. It was an amazing match. So if you have the network, Bash Beach 97. But if you can go back a year before 1996, the Great American Bash 96, which had an amazing show, by the way. Chris Benoit and Taskmaster fought all over the arena. And the most infamous line of all time, they were fighting in the bathroom by the late, great Dusty Rhodes, was said because they did fight in the men's room. And they threw each other all over the men's room. So if you can get to, so you have the network, I highly recommend those matches. Because those were always have been fun. Whenever Benoit met any member of the Dungeon Doom, was always a great time. Unfortunately, there was also a match that we'd like to avoid, and that took place in Uncensored 1996, because this was the worst match of the year. It was called the Temple of Doom match, which was three levels, and it was Hogan and Savage against all the members of the Dungeon of Doom. They had to work their way down the cage into the ring and get the final pin. The concept was great. Unfortunately, the match was horrible. But that was my opinion. That was also the opinion of David Meltzer and a lot of wrestling magazines. However, I'll leave it up to all of you. But right. I thought the match was terrible.
And I did see some of the footage. See, I keep calling it the network, but it's now on Peacock. But yes. You know, yeah, you mentioned, yeah, you see, like, the feud that they had with Hogan. I mean, this was before Hogan jumped to the NWO. Yeah, this is pre-NWO. Mm-hmm. So basically, you mentioned Bash at the Beach in 1996. So basically, you just mentioned this match in 96. So this was months before Hogan, you know, pulled the Ultimate Swerve, which was best for business. But you see, like, everybody always mentions how the NWO is the biggest heel faction in the history of WCW. But I mean, they were. But before the NWO, it was Kevin Sullivan's staple.
So yeah, the Dutch Doom, which was a fantastic organization.
Yeah, and then I think the three something, I always forget. Yet another stable too.
There was, and that stable was ran by Paul E. Dangerously, called the Dangerous Alliance. And that included Art Anderson, Rick Rude, and some other several talents, which was also an amazing faction. And they also used, there was no Four Horsemen because Ric Flair was too busy in the other company at the time, aka WWE or F, whatever you want to call them. But they had some amazing matches as well. WCW did produce so many great talents. So Taskmaster is definitely one of them. And you have to give credit to Kevin Sullivan for something else. He was one of the very few who never worked for McMahon.
I know.
He never worked in Connecticut, so you have to give him all sorts of credit for that, because that's just incredible for somebody of his talent who never worked at any point of his career for the WWE. He never worked for Connecticut, so that's... You have to give the man credit for that. You really do.
You do. And you talk about the retirement match he had in 1997 against Benoit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I forget which pay-per-view that was. Was that Bash of the Beach 97?
Bash 1997.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Okay. Sorry, my mind's just going blank. Yeah, and again, as I say, yeah, of course, Hogan's on the cover. It's him body-slamming Lex Luger. And again, the match was, yeah, he was teaming up with Dennis Rodman, and I'll be honest, and this is off topic, but, you know, Dennis Rodman joining the NWO and then Karl Malone with DDP. I mean, that's entertaining. That's pretty cool. You have to bring in the celebrity athletes. Of course, you got to pay them a lot of money, but you know what? It draws. It's an investment. So, and sometimes
you also had Jay Leno coming in, but we're getting a little off topic here. But
yeah, but
that's right. Was a part of a lot of the booking in WCW. That's what we're talking about.
1994 to 1999. Now, he retired in 1997, but before that, he wrestled while still being a booker. So when he retired as an active competitor, he basically, it gave him more time to focus on his, you know, as the booker. So sure. From 1994 to 1999, now I've gone back and watched much WCW footage from during that time, and of course, Bash of the Beach 94, Hogan's WCW debut, beats Ric Flair for the title. Not the result that you like. The match itself, I think, was great. Definitely a great match. I liked it. But obviously, Hulk Hogan being Hulk Hogan, obviously, he wins the title his first night in WCW. What else would you expect? But, you know, Hogan being the draw, Hogan being the golden child. I mean, WCW just, you know, they did what they had to do to try to, you know, to make the investment worth it.
Hogan being a politician.
Obviously, but still, you know what? I would say, you know, forget about Hogan and the politics. The fact is, I like to focus more on Kevin Sullivan making the match look great. And Ric Flair, of course, and obviously, you got to give credit to Hogan as well, but...
Kevin Sullivan wrestled a lot. He wrestled on Anderson a couple of times. They've had some great matches that was on... I think it was on pay-per-view, but I also believe it was on Saturday Night's Main Event. I know Kevin Sullivan wrestled a lot. He wrestled so many men in the ring. He just had a wonderful career. He really did. He never became heavyweight champion. That's unfortunate. And as a matter of fact, in WCW, he never, ever held a singles title. I don't know if he didn't want them. I don't know if they just didn't think that they could hold it. But the titles he did win was he was a one-time tag team champion with a guy you know very well. Cactus Jack, a.k.a. Mick Foley.
Bang, bang.
They were tag team champions.
Sorry, I just had to.
It's okay. He was also U.S. tag team champion once with somebody else you know at the time, Stephen Williams, now known as Stephen Regal to all of us, who are WWE, but if you follow WCW, you call them at the time Lord Steven Williams. They were United States Tag Team Champions, a title that died in the very early 90s. Also in ECW, in Eastern Championship Wrestling, aka Extreme Championship Wrestling, two-time tag team champion with Hall of Famer Taz. So he's teamed with some legends, and they won the belts twice. So they've done a lot. So he's not only a singles competitor, but he's also an accomplished tag team wrestler, which is very hard to do in wrestling.
It is. And you know what? Even though he was never a world heavyweight champion, he was a champion, and he was a champion in our book because you know what? He didn't need to win a belt to be the champion. Like, you see the impact he's done with the work he's done with other wrestlers and what he's done behind the scenes. That right there is championship material. So he is a champion in our book.
Absolutely. And when Benoit came over from ECW to WCW, they didn't know what to do with him originally.
And Kevin Sullivan found that to be unacceptable because Kevin Sullivan recognized the man's talent. I know that it's controversial to say positive things about Chris Benoit. Look, he did what he did, but look, we cannot deny the fact that the man was a great wrestler. All right. I mean, look.
He also did the same thing for a lot of people in the locker room. Laker, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio. Right.
A lot of guys that WCW, like those other guys, you know, that basically rejected, which is sad. The likes of Mysterio, Guerrero, all those guys being rejected because of the likes of, you know, the bigger guys like Hall, all those guys. And again, I don't want to disparage Hall's name, but.
He made sure that these guys got time in the ring, and that's very important.
Right.
So he was a smaller wrestler. He was never 7 feet tall, 320 pounds. He wasn't that tall. He was strong. He was a very capable wrestler. But he just didn't fit the big man mentality that we like to see our world champions in back in the 90s. Unlike today, we went a little bit smaller with Bret Hart and all these other and some of the other guys. So he gave these guys a hell of a chance, and it worked. Because look at the stars that they became. Eddie Guerrero, Hall of Famer. Chris Benoit, unfortunately, we know what he did, but still member of the Four Horsemen. Jericho, guaranteed Hall of Famer.
Right. And again, Mysterio. As I said, you know, the guys that were held back because of, you know, the big names like Nash, Hogan, again, I don't want to disparage the name of Scott Hall, but, you know, all these other big names that were out there, it resulted in the likes of Mysterio, Conan, Guerrero, Benoit, Dean Malenko as well. You know, it caused them all to be held back.
Jeff Bagwell's on that list. The Steiners are on that list.
Buff Bagwell. And I'm glad you mentioned Buff Bagwell as well.
Well, there were so many stars. Even
Jericho.
Jericho, there were so many stars that he worked with that made sure they got time in the ring. And the talent if WCW didn't destroy themselves by telling Taskmaster, look, we don't trust you anymore, we're going to go fully with Russo and Bischoff. If they would have listened to this man, they still would have been in business, and I fully believe it. Well,
keep in mind, I think in 1999, Kevin Nash was the head of the booking committee.
Yep, and we know that one. Yeah, we all know how well that went.
I mean, you see, we've said it many times. This is what happens when you let the inmates run the asylum. And it wasn't just Nash. I think Luger. I think a lot of the big names. I mean, obviously Hogan as well. They were all part of the booking committee. Let's be honest. They may not admit it, but we know it.
Well, we know it. We absolutely, and they've admitted it. They admitted that they took over. But
a lot of them did. Did Hogan admit it? Hogan doesn't seem to be the guy that would admit something like that.
Hogan said that he had control and never used it. We all know what a lie that is because of what happened to Starrcade in 1997. We all know what happened at Bash at the Beach 2000. So Hogan's just a liar and a politician, but you know, kind of like somebody else around him, The Rock. So, but you know, anyway.
Although there's a comment that somebody wanted me to talk to you about. We're gonna get off topic for a little bit. Now he did say that if. He said, well, he doesn't know if it's true or not about The Rock politicking, but he this particular individual who listened to the show said, if The Rock really took politicking to that whole level, he probably would have had his daughter immediately leave NXT for the main roster, which is a good point, but...
First, his daughter's not ready to come out of NXT, number one.
Right.
And number two, he absolutely played politics on this.
Right. Yeah, and he agrees with you, but he's also suggesting that, I mean, anything could have happened. I mean, that's the thing with backstage politics. Something happens, and it's just something that we didn't really think was going to happen, and it happens. It, basically, we get blindsided with sometimes a punch to the face, sometimes with a slap to the face. Whatever it is, we get blindsided, bro.
There was zero question about if they played politics.
Yeah.
What happened at SummerSlam. And you'll never convince me otherwise. But
right.
Everybody has a right to an opinion, but we're getting a little topic here anyway. Back to Mr.
Politics
Sullivan.
Politics is just, yeah. Like, because this is about politics right here. I mean, you know, with backstage. But Kevin Sullivan seemed to me that he was basically trying to keep the politics away and just basically try to do business rather than let personal feelings and backstage politics ruin wrestling, because backstage politics and wrestling and creative-wise, it's basically a skid mark on the underwear of life that is professional wrestling.
Absolutely, but it does happen. But anyway, a couple of things we didn't mention. He was born, his birthday was September 26th. 1949. He did not serve in the military. For anybody who wants to know, he's not a veteran. He was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he lived his whole life. He never left Massachusetts, my second home state, because that's where my cooking career started. He passed away August 9th. He passed away August 9th, 2024. This past Friday, he died of a blood clot in the leg. This is something that is very hurtful. Because of who this man was, what he did. He spent his whole life, his whole professional life in wrestling. His whole life was pro wrestling. I don't know if his children are going to follow in his footsteps. I have no idea. I didn't get that far in research, unfortunately. He kept, like most professional wrestlers, he tried to keep his family out of the spotlight. And he did a very good job of it. I was not even aware that he got remarried. And then he had four children until he did my research on him. So that is something that is just an excellent, excellent thing, way about him. He also had a very famous manager, which we would mention, Jackie, who went on to wrestle for the WWE for a while. Very, very strong woman. She became Jacqueline, became also wrestling in TNA. She became the women's heavyweight champion WWE.
Twice.
She had a very, very successful career, and she worked with Taskmaster and Dungeon of Doom. And of course, she went on to manage several people in TNA, particularly James Storm. Sorry about your damn luck. so that all these people that we've mentioned can thank Kevin Sullivan and Taskmaster for their career.
Absolutely. And
Jacqueline even thanked him several times and said, thank you for helping me in my career. And I think that a lot of wrestlers owe him what they've done. And I will say this, I'm very angry at the WWE for only flashing his picture and just saying his birth date and the day he passed on. There was no interviews about him. There was no talking about him. They didn't even ring the bell for the man. I know he didn't wrestle for the company. But show the man some respect.
Right? You see, when it comes to somebody that's well-known in pro wrestling, just because he didn't go to one company does not mean that company should not show him respect. Like in this particular situation, AEW, TNA Wrestling, the National Wrestling Alliance, all of them. So even Maxwell Jacob Friedman even you know made a tweet you know showing some respect. You see, but every wrestler at this point who understands the impact that Kevin Sullivan made, you know, even if like that, you watch what the guy's done, you read about what he's done, you learn a thing or two.
So yeah, sure.
Wrestlers today and wrestling fans, we are thankful for Kevin Sullivan. Again, barely know anything about the guy, but everything I've read and I've learned of it, wow, this guy is far beyond a legend in wrestling. And you know what? The fact that he didn't work in WWE, something tells me not only did he not want to, but he didn't need to, because part of me believes that he felt that his ideas, his direction, everything, it would just be rejected. So he's like, what's the point if that's going to happen? So with all that happening, him being rejected, he was not going to allow himself to be disrespected. I'm sure that Vince many times tried to convince and probably offered a lot of money, did this and all that, but Kevin Sullivan still said no. I mean, probably I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, I'm sure that Vince or a lot of people in the company tried to convince Kevin Sullivan to come work for the company, but no matter what they threw, he still said no. Because and if that's the case, I would imagine because he knew that his ideas and his way of doing business would be basically be non-existent, because we all know how Vince ran the company with an iron fist. It's Vince's. It's all Vince. Vince has say so in everything. You could literally spend 24 hours trying to come up with one idea, and in just one heart in a heartbeat, Vince is gonna crap all over it.
I'm not sure why he never worked in Connecticut. I don't know why he never worked for WWE. I know for a fact Tim and Vince did not get along. From what I'm understanding, he didn't like. I'm guessing that for the stars in the earlier days before the Monday Night War, that crossed over from WWE did not get their push at first. For a while, in the reverse, sometimes it did work. Ray Charles was one of them. May he rest in peace. Rick Rude. So I don't exactly know why Kevin Sullivan didn't work for Vince. I can't speak on that. I don't know if they had any meetings with each other. So there was no research. I'm sure you can, if you dig deep enough, you can find that. But I honestly don't know from the top of my head.
They say as a wrestler that the reason why he never wrestled there was because of his size. But but in this case, we're not referring to him working at the WWE as a wrestler. We're talking about him working creative.
How many guys did Vince promise to be on the creative team, and then he turned around and said no?
I'm sure a lot, but it's far beyond that. I mean, I guess you would ask, like, Vince promises them that they're gonna have some duties as well that he, like that, and yeah.
First thing off the top of my head, Jake the Snake Roberts. After WrestleMania 80, Jake the Snake was promised that he was going to go on to the writing team and on the creative team, and Vince turned around and told him, we're not going to go in that direction.
Really?
Jake wound up in WCW for a while. It didn't work out in WCW for Jake the Snake Roberts either, but that was a contract negotiation problem. But I'm sure there are plenty of people on the roster who have promised more things than Vince and didn't get it. So Kevin Sullivan probably saw a better product than WCW at the time. He probably saw more. I don't know if it was more money, or if it was just that he didn't want to lose his booking position. It was probably he didn't want to lose the front office position, and that goes to a lot of work when you're a pro wrestler. Which way do you want to go after your career is done in the ring? What do I do now? So I think that's why he didn't go. I think that's why he didn't go to Connecticut. I can't say for sure because I'm not in the company. You're not in the company. We can just speculate that's what happened. And I think I'm going to agree with you. I believe that's what happened, that he was very happy in WCW and that he did not want to leave his position in WCW.
Right. And then we refer to when WCW went down and then was bought by Vince. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I think it's because, I mean, again, you know, he could have worked, you know, backstage and, you know, do creative in WWE during the post WCW days, but he didn't. I mean, he did independent bookings and wrestled and appeared at many promotions during that time. I think in 2003, he did briefly work for TNA Wrestling. In 2016 and 2017, he briefly worked at Ring of Honor.
Yes.
So I wonder, like, if during that time, Did he have a pro wrestling school, or was he just doing other things outside of wrestling? I mean, I don't know.
Honestly, I think he was more concerned with being a father and a husband to his family than anything else. And I think if that's what he did, then that's an amazing position for him. Because if you focus on your family more than your career, that means that's incredible to me. And I think that's what he really did. So, but he did work for Ring of Honor. He did do a shoot interview with Ring of Honor. He had a good time with them. I saw the DVD. I don't own it, but I saw the DVD.
Right.
It was an incredible show. So Kevin Sullivan gave his whole life to pro wrestling. And
amen. Amen.
That's a lot about him.
Absolutely. I mean, much respect to him. His legacy is a positive impact.
Man. Absolutely.
And it's not only his legacy, you know, behind the scenes, but as a wrestler too. You know, working in a company, you know, Championship Wrestling in Florida, which was an NWA territory before landing in Jim Crockett Promotions, which of course, you know, ended up being WCW. You know, he basically worked his way up the ladder.
And he did it the hard way. But I want to know something.
The hard way, yeah.
You know what I'd love to know? I'd love to know what Paul Heyman thought about him. I'd love to know what Paul Heyman had to say about Kevin Sullivan. That's something I really, because they worked WCW together for years. That's something I'd like to know. What did Rick and the Dragon Steamboat think about him? Ric Flair. What did these legends think about this legend? That I'd love to know. Unfortunately, I don't know if we're ever going to find out. I hope we find out sooner or come later. But
I've actually got some tweets right here from some. Triple H described him as one of the most unique minds in the history of the industry, pushing creative boundaries, developing ideas of intriguing characters. You know, just like we talked about, Eric Bischoff. You know, mentioned that he woke up to the news of Kevin Sullivan's passing. It hits him hard personally, and basically he mentions that Bischoff mentioned the last time he spoke to Kevin, they talked about a fishing trip, which that really hurts right there because he mentions that Kevin loved the water. So, and of course, Ric Flair said he was saddened to hear about it. Considers him him as an all-time great athlete and a friend. Even DDP, you know, gave his thoughts. So, yeah.
Yeah,
but you mentioned like that, I'm sure everybody's going to say some thoughts. I mean, Bischoff has his show; it's called 83 Weeks, which refers to the Monday Night War. So, you know, I'm sure all these, you know, wrestling personalities, whatever, that have their own shows. I'm sure by now, if not yet, they've already talked about it.
I'm sure they have.
I'll be honest with you. In my case, there's a whole lot more positives about the guy than there are negatives.
I
would say there's nothing negative about the guy. Well, keep in mind, he's not perfect. Nobody is. But I would say the track record? No. Track record is an overwhelming amount of positivity about Kevin Sullivan.
I think that's what it is. I think that dude's just a very positive person working in the industry that he loved. I think that's who he was.
I think that's
how we're going to remember him. I'm old enough, and I'm going to put myself out there a little bit. I'm old enough to remember when he wrestled and was the booker for WCW. And I remember all the good times that we had watching him in the ring or watching him booking matches or watching him giving younger stars a chance. And that's just amazing to me. I was watching a Nitro earlier on from 1998. I think it was the March 30th edition, and in the second hour, they opened up with Sting against DDP for the title. It was an incredible match. As a matter of fact, that whole show was incredible. So, if you have the network, March 30th, 1998, you'll see what we're talking about here. Because that was just an incredible show. It was a lot of fun. Piper's on the show. Flair's on the show. Flair's not there. I'm sorry. Piper's on the show. Sting's there. DDP's there. Goldberg's there. It's just, it was a fun time to be a fan at that point in wrestling. It really was. So if you can also go back and watch, like we said, Great American Bash 96, Bash the Beach 1997, his farewell match, which was an incredible match, both against the late Chris Benoit. If you go back deeper, like 1993, 1994, you can probably find him in the ring. He's just an incredible, incredible athlete, and we're really going to miss him. I don't know if he ever was a face. To my knowledge, he was always heel. But in WCW, the better wrestlers were heel anyway.
Right.
So
But I would say, based on the positive impact he's made for wrestling, it's for the business and for the talent. He may have been a heel on screen, but overall, I would say he's a babyface. So I'm going to ask you before we close it out, what was your favorite match and what was the best thing that you think that Kevin Sullivan did creative-wise?
My favorite match with him is the Great American Bash 96 against Benoit. Because that was for outside of ECW, and I've never seen two guys really go all the way up, leave the ring, over the safety barrier, fight all the way up the arena, fight in the bathroom, knock somebody down the stairs, go back into the ring, fight each other again. It was just a phenomenal, phenomenal time. That whole thing with the with the Dungeon of Doom was one of my favorite periods in WCW. That was just a whole lot of fun. And this one at Bash at the Beach 97 is also. Creatively, I think the Dungeon of Doom is one of the greatest heel groups of all time. And if you are old enough like me to remember WCW back in the day, you're going to be, I hope you agree with me. So many wonderful characters came out of that storyline. There were some bad matches too, but there were some wonderful matches as well. I'm going to really miss Kevin Sullivan. I really am. This hurt. When I found out, my heart sunk when I found out. I was like, oh, man. And the first thing I said was, we're going to have to cover some ringside chaos to say goodbye to a legend. And
absolutely.
Alex, thank you for agreeing to do with it with me. I really do.
Well, you know what? Look, this is an opportunity for content. And honestly, this is an episode that you were badly needed for, Mark, because when I saw that Kevin Sullivan passing away, you know, you came to mind along with several other people, but I'm like, because Mark knows this wrestling so well, not only is Mark going to be on this episode, but Mark is going to assume the lead in this one because, you know, I'm not, you know, my level of knowledge in wrestling is nowhere near as yours. And some would say it's because Mark is older. I'm like, okay, fine. But, you know, but we all kind of basically study the art of pro wrestling in a different way.
Sure.
So, but all I can say is based on what I've learned, the guy was a genius. Like, kind of based, you could just tell, like, he didn't just come up with storylines and then just, like, he did some thinking. Like, he was create, like, again, took the word, you know, and of being creative and took it to a whole new level, basically. Like, he was trying to make it look as good as possible, which means that he was passionate about the business and how seriously he took the business because he wanted to make sure that things would work, not only for the benefit of him and the wrestlers, but for the benefit and the future of the industry of professional wrestling.
He made the heel cool. He made being the bad guy cool. He really did.
Okay, well, some would say Razor Ramon, the late Scott Hall. Razor Ramon did that, but a lot of talents made the bad guy look cool. I think Kevin Sullivan took that to a whole new level. Scott Hall, Razor Ramon did the same way. They did the same thing. Just when you think that one person can't make it better, they always make it better. But I'm not going to say that one did it better than the other. Razor Ramon and Kevin Sullivan made the heel look cool, but they did it in their own unique way. So major kudos to Kevin Sullivan and, of course, Scott Hall, Razor Ramon. May they both rest in peace.
I'm going to make you laugh, okay? Back in 1995 and 1996, when the Dungeon of Doom and all this thing was going on, I was always a WWE, at the time, F fan. But I got kind of bored with them. I didn't think Deeds was that good of a champion. Then again, I didn't think Hogan was either. So I started looking at the mid-carders a little bit. And then I flipped on Nitro one morning and I said, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. We got a heel group with all these really cool wrestlers trying to beat up Hogan. I went, I like this. So I caught myself rooting for the heel for the first time in my life. And my friend's like, how could you watch WCW? I said, well, because we've got Sting, Flair, Kevin Sullivan. They went, who? The Dungeon of Doom? Who? I went, flip on Nitro.
Learn.
Flip on Saturday nights. Flip on WCW Saturday night. So there was always a war between the two companies. But, I mean, I was always watching WCW, obviously. But Kevin Sullivan drew me more to WCW 1995 at the time because 95 was just a horrible year for WWE, but was a great year for WCW, even though Hogan had the belt. But so many wonderful things came out of WCW. Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Jericho, Malenko, Rey Mysterio, all the Lucha Libres, all the young talent that came out of there. All of them can thank Kevin Sullivan for putting them on TV. Booker T as well, Harlem Heat. So many wonderful tag teams were there. And I think that Kevin Sullivan should take a bow for what he did in professional wrestling. So, Kevin, from all of us fans here in New York, we thank you. We're going to miss you. You're a legend. And on this show, I promise you, you will never be forgotten. Alex?
You will never be forgotten. My deepest and most sincere condolences to the man's family and to his friends. Pro wrestling lost one of the biggest names it could ever ask for. He may no longer be with us, but his legacy, his impact, and his love and passion for everything he did for the business will not and cannot be forgotten. Kevin Sullivan, rest in peace, sir. You will be missed.
Absolutely. This was heartbreaking. And
absolutely.
I feel especially bad for his children because, I'm close to my dad. And I lost my father a couple of years ago. I miss him very much. When you lose your father, I didn't lose mine yet, but I did lose my godfather, Uncle Jerry. I lost my father-in-law. When that void's there, it's impossible to get back. Mm-hmm. So to his children, his wife, I feel so terrible for them. You have my heart. Kevin Sullivan, rest in peace. We're going to miss you forever.
You will be missed. Again, my most sincere, deepest condolences to the family. And everybody, y'all know you can find this show wherever you get your podcasts. So please hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. Please leave a 5-star review. Please share this show out. And we'll see y'all next time.
Bye-bye now.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.